We're looking at the latest developments in the spread of COVID and what new guidelines say about gatherings and masks. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In President Biden's speech to the nation Thursday on the one-year anniversary of the pandemic, he called on Americans to look forward to the summer and a possible return to normalcy.
By July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cookout or a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day. That doesn't mean large events with lots of people together, but it does mean small groups will be able to get together.
Do you have questions about the CDC guidelines now that you're fully vaccinated? What guidance do you seek on mask wearing and visiting loved ones? Are you concerned about new, more contagious variants? 800-642-1234. Dr. Mary Beth Graham is an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She's medical director of infection prevention and control at Froedtert Hospital. Dr. Graham, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's first start off with vaccination. What does it mean when someone is fully vaccinated? What is that window?
So with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is the one-shot vaccine, one can expect that they would be considered fully vaccinated about 2 weeks after. For the two mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna, they are two-shot series. The Pfizer is at day one and day 21. 2 weeks after that second shot, you're considered fully vaccinated. Moderna is at 1 and 28 days. Again, 2 weeks after that shot, you're considered fully vaccinated.
Why the 2 weeks after that last dose or after the single dose?
So it's essentially what you need to give your immune system time to do is to build up those antibodies and essentially educate your immune system so that if you come into contact with SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, that your body can react appropriately to give you some level of protection.
What is the CDC saying about people who are fully vaccinated? What can they do in public settings?
So the CDC relaxed some of the recommendations, but what President Biden said is was very clear and concise, is that people who have been vaccinated can gather together in small groups. Adults who are vaccinated, grandparents who are vaccinated can visit their grandchildren if there's a big if there, if they know that they're going to a family that has either been quarantined or is in a situation where they potentially wouldn't be gathering in large groups. As we look forward, the recommendation is, again, groups of people who have been vaccinated, or I would add in there too, people who have recovered from COVID, typically within that first 3 to 6 months, they'll also have immunity against the virus. They can gather together, but this isn't an open invitation for, again, large crowds like American Family Field being full for Brewers games this summer. There still be crowd restrictions as we look at that. So that's the big issue, is that people understanding that it is, yes, we can get together, but we need to get together smartly. And all throughout the pandemic, that should have been the message, is that we can get together if we do it in a very smart and systematic way.
So where does this leave mask wearing and social distancing for people who are fully vaccinated?
So mask wearing and social distancing is still incredibly important for everyone, regardless of vaccination status, when you're in the general public or if you're going places where you don't know if people are vaccinated. If you're having, again, that gathering of family members who have been vaccinated or have some sort of immunity, you don't need to wear those masks and you can be together in those situations. But again, let's say somebody, I work from my office, I can actually see American Family Field from here. I have a great view. So as I look out there, if you were to go there, you would still be expected to wear a mask going to the baseball game. versus going to the grocery store. You should still be wearing a mask again out in public where you don't know those around you, whether they have some sort of immunity. Those things are still important.
We're talking with Dr. Mary Beth Graham, an internal medicine infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She's giving us the latest on COVID vaccines and what it means for our daily lives to be fully vaccinated. Are you someone who is fully vaccinated? Which vaccine did you receive? And what now are you doing? Do you feel like you are able to go out and do more than you did before? 800-642-1234. Saul is with us in Stevens Point with a question. Hi, Saul. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I had kind of a technical question. It has to do with cellular immunity. All of the approved vaccines supposedly have very strong cellular immunity as well as humoral. So that means that cells that express foreign antigens will be attacked by killer T cells. And I'm wondering whether, I'm sorry.
No, take your time.
I'm wondering whether whether the vaccine, whether the muscle cells which express this spike protein, which the immune system attacks, whether the muscle cells themselves would be attacked by killer T cells.
Oh, no. So essentially, when we look at humoral immune responses and cellular immune responses, let's look at it this way. Humoral immunity means antibody, and antibodies are often, after you get a vaccine with the COVID-19 vaccine or the flu vaccine, for a certain amount of time after those vaccines, you will have circulating antibody. So with the COVID-19 vaccines, you have, if you've been vaccinated in our bodies, and I've been vaccinated, I have circulating antibodies at this time, which recognize the spike protein of COVID-19, basically of SARS-CoV-2. So that's what that antibody, what it will do is hopefully glom on to the virus, because the virus really can't do anything until it gets into a cell. It has to adhere to the ACE2 receptor. And ACE2 receptors aren't just on muscle cells, they're on a whole slew of different cells in your body. But if that antibody gloms on to that spike protein, which it does, it's kind of a natural attraction, it will prevent the attachment of that virus to the ACE2 receptor. Therefore, the virus can't get into your cell. Therefore, the virus can't make more of itself or damage the cell that it's in. So that's the key thing. Cellular immunity essentially comes in as an adjunct to that. Cellular immunity doesn't, it basically your cells have to remember to do this. So circulating antibody is right there for the immediate effect. The cellular immunity needs just a little bit for your body to remember, oh, wait, I need to send these cells out to do this. And it's like a 1-2 punch against the virus. And so essentially when you do that, it's with all types of virus. We do this with the flu vaccine, et cetera. So we're not going to be damaging our own cells. Essentially what we're doing is going after the virus and essentially preventing that virus from getting into cells. Most of the time, if cells get infected, those T cells aren't going to come and attack those and damage those.
Okay. So what happens if you have COVID-like symptoms and you have been fully vaccinated? What should you do?
So the key issue is that we really want those people to seek medical attention. And the key reason is what we don't know at this point in time with the emergence of variants are, could there be variants in our community which will not be fully, you won't be fully protected from those because of the vaccine. Right now, most of the data is that for the primary variants that are circulating, that there is some level of protection, but not as good as there is for what we would call wild type SARS-CoV-2. So if somebody gets symptoms, it is important, I think, to contact your medical professional. I do think it's important to get tested. And then what we do on our side, our microbiology labs, if we know somebody's been vaccinated and then develops COVID-19, we send those viruses off to the state so that they can be sequenced again to look at them to say, okay, is this one of the known variants, either the UK, the South African, Brazilian variant, which is here, or do we have a different variant? Incredibly important, because this is how the science will progress so that we know better ways, so that down the line, potentially a better vaccine even will come out later that can cover these.
Yeah, so a keen eye on surveillance there of the mutations. Infectious disease specialist Mary Beth Graham is our guide this hour, fielding your questions about COVID, how to contain the spread. Have you received your vaccine yet? Are you concerned that you won't be protected from new variants of the virus? Do you have underlying medical conditions? What do you think about vaccines opening up to you later this month? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Biden promised in his address to the nation Thursday that all adults would be eligible for the COVID vaccine by May the 1st. The president said there would be enough vaccine supply to start administering shots to every adult by the end of May, months ahead of schedule. Have you had difficulty scheduling your COVID vaccine? What part of the state do you live in? What do you think is the solution to fixing this? Are you vaccinated and wonder what it means for mask wearing and seeing other people? 800-642-1234. We have internist and infectious disease specialist Mary Beth Graham from the Medical College of Wisconsin. Let's bring in Becky now in Partyville with a question. Hi, Becky.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to know more about why those of us who've been fully vaccinated are recommended to still wear masks when we're out in public with other people and that we don't know their vaccination situation. Is it because we can still pass it along? I don't think so. Is it because we can still catch it? What's the reason behind still needing to wear masks?
So the key issue is that people who've been vaccinated, and I picture it this way, because you've been vaccinated doesn't mean that you are surrounded by some magic bubble or force shield that doesn't allow SARS-CoV-2 to come into you. And people who are vaccinated, if they are exposed to the virus, can still get it in the respiratory tract. It isn't until it gets in you that the vaccine turns on your immune system to fight it. So you still could potentially pick up the virus and then potentially be infectious for a short period of time while your body's taking care of it. So that's one of the reasons why, when we still have such large amounts of community spread, that we want everybody to continue the masking. The concept of herd immunity is, part of it is, if you can get enough people who cannot, basically who are either immune from this or doing mitigation to prevent the virus from spreading, essentially that's when you control the pandemic. So the masking is still an absolutely essential part of this.
All right. Let's bring in Mary now in Janesville with a question. Mary, hi, go ahead. Are you there, Mary?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi. So sorry. So I've heard things that the virus itself can cause an autoimmune disease, and I was especially interested because I suffered with Guillain-Barré, was hospitalized for 5 months, totally paralyzed. And so I was really vigilant about not getting in contact with, you know, people that I didn't know, wear my mask and everything. And now I'm a little worried about whether the vaccine can cause that as well.
So there, I'm sorry you had to go through that. So the issue is that there are, and I think I'm going to use this as a point to encourage people to really strongly think about getting vaccinated. The majority of people who have been infected with SARS-CoV-2 develop COVID-19. Will recover without sequela. But we are learning more and more and seeing more and more patients who are now referred to as, some people call them long haulers, it's post-COVID, syndrome, et cetera. There are a lot of different names for it. And some of those symptoms that patients are experiencing can be incredibly debilitating. And we have even started clinics here at Fredericton Medical College of Wisconsin with providers in pulmonary and hematology and just a number of different providers, neurology, psychiatry, et cetera, because of some of these long haul effects. So the issue about Guillain-Barré, I haven't read anything about the disease actually associated with that. Some of the other things that we've seen in our long haulers, blood clots in the lung, blood clots in the leg, brain fog. I mean, there's just, it's innumerable, the number of things that you can see. For somebody who has a prior history of Guillain-Barré, it is important to talk with your primary care physician with regards to risk and benefit of going forth with any type of vaccine. So whether it is flu vaccine, any type of vaccine, that is the recommendation typically for individuals who've had that history. These vaccines are not related to any other vaccine that are currently on the market. The mRNA vaccines are not similar to flu or pneumococcal vaccine, et cetera. Even the Johnson & Johnson adenovirus vaccine, again, is not the same as what we've seen with other vaccines. I have not heard about any cases of Guillain-Barré that have occurred with this particular vaccine. Again, and there have been millions of people around the world who have been vaccinated with this. But again, with your history, and especially we tell anybody like serious allergy history, et cetera, we say talk to your provider, potentially seek out the an opinion from an allergy immunologist before going forward with a vaccine. But our feeling is, I mean, my feeling is, and I think the majority of my infectious disease community and public health is that we really support this vaccine wholeheartedly. We want shots in as many arms as possible. We definitely would love to see in the population 70, 80, 90% of the population getting vaccinated.
Marie, thank you for your call. We're talking with Dr. Mary Beth Graham, internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin, taking your questions, getting us up to speed on the COVID vaccine and what it means once people are fully vaccinated. 800-642-1234. Dr. Graham, you mentioned long haulers. What are the therapeutic options and treatments now, the advancements? What do you know now about long haulers?
Long haulers, I'm just going to be totally honest. There's a lot of stuff with long haulers that's an absolute mystery. I've been talking with my pulmonary colleagues. They have individuals who are coming in who used to be long distance runners, who on every test that you do on them, their oxygen levels are fine, all their blood tests look fine, everything looks good. They can't run anymore. They feel winded going across the room. I mean, there are the brain fog that we have seen, the fatigue, the depression. I mean, all of these symptoms are incredibly real. And I think there are numerous groups, again, whether it is our neurologist, our pulmonologist, our psychiatrist, et cetera, they're trying to try therapies that may be symptomatic. But in terms of figuring out the exact pathophysiology about why those symptoms are happening is unclear. I mean, there are some symptoms we've seen, again, the DVT, the deep venous thrombosis in the legs, the pulmonary embolism, the bleeds. We know that has to do with the fact that the virus has a particular affinity for basically to affect megakaryocytes, platelet function, et cetera, and can then lead to this problem with clotting down the line.
Jeremiah is with us from La Crosse with a question. Hi, Jeremiah. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you. I was just wondering, so knowing that, you know, the vaccines that are out there now, either using the mRNA or the protein spike to get into the cells, and the cells then make those and then the antibodies, do the cells continue to make, like, the protein spikes utilizing either the mRNA, or do they decide to stop at some point? Like, how does that impact immunity over the long haul?
So that's a million-dollar question. so really, really it is. So the thing is that you don't need to keep making spike antibody. So that when the mRNA goes in, it essentially is read by, it doesn't go into the nucleus, doesn't incorporate into our cells, doesn't change our genetic material, but it's read by certain things in a cell called ribosomes, and then they make the spike protein. The our immune system is really amazing. And so at the time we make the antibodies, we also, the body learns to develop what are referred to as memory B cells. So you don't need to be continually exposed to that spike protein. You don't need to keep making it because that mRNA is degraded over time and then it's gone from your body. So what they injected in the vaccine essentially leaves. But what your body has done in the meantime, it has made antibodies which will be circulating, and circulating antibodies after the stimulus can remain circulating for months. But they also teach your body to make what are referred to as memory B cells, so that in the future, let's say a year from now, if you get exposed, you would have those memory B cells. The key question with coronavirus is, would you make those antibodies quick enough? This is the reason why with flu vaccine, we get immunized every year so that we have circulating antibody, because it takes a little bit longer to, the immune system says, oh, wait, I'm supposed to make this. So it's not instantaneous, the same way as circulating antibody is there to glom onto the virus, whether it's a flu virus or it's a coronavirus.
Dr. Mary Beth Graham, Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control for Frederick Hospital, fielding your questions about vaccine, about COVID treatments, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with her after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're getting the latest medical information on fighting the pandemic here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House COVID-19 Task Force encouraged childcare providers to get vaccinated during a briefing Friday as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention published updated guidance there. The director of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, emphasized that vaccines are the path out of the pandemic.
As we get more vaccinations into communities, I am asking everyone to do the right thing. Continue taking public health precautions and be ready to roll up your sleeve when that vaccine is available to you.
We have internal medicine specialist Mary Beth Graham, medical director of infection prevention and control for Frederick Hospital, and she's with us for the hour. Jane is joining us from Suamico. Jane, hi, what is your situation?
I'm calling just to offer people hope. My 90-year-old mother lives with me, and I'm 65. We were both vaccinated and waited our waiting period. And this last weekend, for the first time in more than a year, we went to visit my mother's 88-year-old sister, who was also fully vaccinated and waited her waiting period. And that hug I saw brought tears to my eyes. We ate lunch together, no masks. We chatted for the day and had such a wonderful visit, and I want people to know that's what's in their future.
Oh, Jane, what a powerful and such an uplifting story. Dr. Graham?
I've got goosebumps and I've got tears in my eyes, and that's what we want.
Mm.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, Jane, thank you so much, and take care. Linda in Pewaukee is next. Hi, Linda, go ahead.
Hi, I'm just going to turn it down. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yep. Go ahead, Linda.
Okay. So my question is, I have heard several people say that they have had COVID already and that they're not getting vaccinated. I feel like I may have had it because I got pretty sick at the beginning of all this before they even had testing. I work in a grocery store, front line on the register, and tons of people come through. But my question to you is, if you've had it already, is it necessary to get the shot again?
The answer to that is yes. There was a recent national meeting. It's called CROI, and it's Conference on Retrovirus and Opportunistic Infections, so CROI. And there was a fabulous talk that was given. And they looked at individuals who had had previous COVID-19 and then got vaccinated, and people who'd never had it and got vaccinated. And what was very clear is if you looked at people who had previously had it, and these were people who had had it within the past 8 months, we know that antibody titers wane over time. So in general, that people who had previously had COVID had low-level antibody. Those studies were very interesting because one dose of one of the mRNA vaccines essentially raised their levels up to a point where they equaled what people who were getting the two-shot series would get over time. So there was some low-level antibody production, but giving that vaccine boosted their immunity and essentially will provide additional protection. The question is, when the antibody levels get lower, will they provide enough protection that somebody could basically would be protected from another infection? So we strongly, strongly recommend that people get the vaccine. Now, when? Right now, it's you can wait. CDC's last update said probably you can wait up to 3 months after you had it. We don't actually know because most of the time we're not doing quantitative antibody titers on people. But I would say if you are 3 to 6 months post having had COVID-19 and you are eligible for the vaccine, please get the vaccine.
What happens if you have COVID, you're fighting COVID, and you're scheduled to get the vaccine?
So for people, so if you have had COVID, again, the CDC recommendation is if you've had COVID and you fully recovered and you're out of your, you know, quarantine period, your isolation period, then you can go ahead and get the vaccine, or you can wait up to 3 months. And I think many people are waiting that about that 3 months just until to give other people a chance to get the vaccine who've never had it. Okay. So I've a number of my colleagues who previously had COVID would say, listen, I know I'm protected for at least a short period of time. I'm going to allow my vaccine, you know, that I was offered to go to somebody else. So that, again, we can build up immunity in the community. And then I will get my vaccine again in that 3 to 6 month period.
Okay. Let's look at who is eligible now here in Wisconsin for vaccines. We heard the State Department of Health Services announced that starting March 29th, people with certain medical conditions will be eligible. What are some examples of the conditions that fall under the new category of eligibility?
So they pick several chronic medical conditions, things such as patients with cancer, patients with diabetes, patients with asthma. They also added in people who were obese, and they had two categories based on BMI. So they had morbidly obese with the BMIs of over 40, but they also included BMI over 30, in addition to some other conditions that were listed. But there are I don't have them all memorized. I apologize.
No, that's okay.
But they essentially wanted to look at those groups and say, as we've looked at individuals, you know, in terms of biggest risk for severe disease and risk of dying, again, those are primarily our patients over the age of 75. So that's where that's that initial group. So again, the over 65 would be getting all of them. Then when we looked at other groups, obesity was huge. And in fact, we've seen a large number of younger adults who are obese who had very complicated cases. And personally, I've had several patients who fit that criteria who died in our care here at Fredericton Medical College. So we want to get those individuals vaccinated.
Let's look inside the hospital at Fredericton and in, you know, the COVID areas. How have vaccines been accepted by staff, and what are you seeing in terms of the number of patients in your care?
So the number of people hospitalized at Fredericton Medical College is amazingly, it feels weird. I'm on hospital duty right now. It feels very weird in the hospital right now because most of our units aren't on lockdown. And so the fact that I can go from unit to unit and not having going into each unit where there's lockdown because the majority of patients on each one of those units has COVID is an amazing and somewhat surreal feeling. So that's fantastic to see that. With regards to acceptance of the vaccine, I would say, again, the majority of our employees have gotten the vaccine if they are eligible. Those who needed to wait, we've had some employees who received either the monoclonal antibody for treatment. Of course, the recommendation is those individuals wait 90 days. We've had some defer because they had had COVID and wanted to make sure there was enough vaccine for other people. We've also had employees who just refused to get it. And the issue of vaccine hesitancy, we are trying desperately to address that, to try to allay people's fears with regards to the risk of the vaccine. Again, the things on the internet talking about it's going to change your genetic code. No, it doesn't do that. I mean, there are things just trying to get people to understand the safety and the efficacy of these vaccines and why it's so important to get it.
Dr. Mary Beth Graham is with us, internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and she's getting us up to speed on the COVID vaccine, what it means once people are fully vaccinated, and fielding your questions about COVID treatment and vaccines at 800-642-1234. Ellen is joining us now from Madison. Hi, Ellen.
Yes, hi. I've had my two shots, and I'm very grateful to have had them. But when the doctor talks about protection from the shots, I was under the assumption that once you've gone through the shots and have waited the 2 weeks, that you still could get COVID. It just wouldn't be as serious or deadly as before. Is that the case? And if so, then I wonder why the mask requirements are getting less and less
stringent.
Important.
Yeah. Ellen, thank you.
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier in the program, people who are vaccinated still potentially could come into contact with the virus, could become infected, may be asymptomatic, or could develop disease if indeed it is a variant that is not as well covered by the antibodies that you make from the vaccine. So the variants could evade that protection that you get from the vaccine. So again, it's incredibly important. Public health has been very, very firm with regards to the maintaining in public of the social distancing, the hand washing, and the masking until we get to a point where we have a larger part of the population that has been vaccinated. So I'm glad you came away with that idea, because many come away thinking, I'm invincible now. I've had my vaccine. I can do anything I want. And that's not what we want people taking away from this. We still need caution. We need to understand that, yes, that the virus is still out there. And we still don't want people to acquire it. So wear that mask.
Mary from Waukesha called in and is wondering, what causes the big red rash on the arm from the COVID-19 vaccine site? Why do some people get the rash and others do not?
It's mostly the immune response. So it is your own body sending different types of immune effector cells to that area and saying, what's going on here? And again, you're exactly right. Some people get it, many don't. Some people get a fever after the vaccine, many don't. It varies. With older adults, it is usually just a sore arm without much of anything else, but I've also heard that in my younger colleagues. It just depends on how your immune response is to that particular, to that virus. We've wondered if people who previously had COVID, if they have a more robust immune response and potentially could have more symptoms after getting the vaccine. But again, that doesn't seem to be universal either.
Dr. Mary Beth Graham is an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She's fielding your questions on COVID spread, on treatment, on vaccines. Are you a long hauler fighting lingering effects for months and months? How are you getting help? What's working? What do you want to know about hospitalization and the latest in therapeutic treatments to fight the effects of the disease? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Mary Beth Graham here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with internal medicine and infectious disease specialist Mary Beth Graham. More than 1.2 million Wisconsinites, over 20% now, have had at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. The pace of vaccinations in our country has been accelerating ahead of the date by which President Biden wants all adults to be eligible. Dr. Graham of the Medical College of Wisconsin, she is with us for 10 more minutes. Steve is joining us from Minnesota with a question. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was wondering if there's any truth to the fact, to the story that I've heard about different blood types. I have O positive, and my friend has O positive, and he's heard stories that he's more immune to getting the COVID-19 virus. Is there any truth to that?
So when they looked at blood types of individuals who required hospitalization, it's not specifically acquiring it, but there did tend to be more of an associated with more severe disease with people with type A blood versus other blood types, and type O, there tended to be less of those. But it didn't mean that people couldn't get infected. Now, how exactly blood type affects that, I'll be honest, I don't know the exact issue, but I've seen plenty of patients and taken care of plenty of patients. I ran the COVID-19 convalescent plasma trials at Froedtert Hospital, and I had people of every blood type coming in with severe enough disease to require convalescent plasma.
Travis is with us in Milwaukee with a question. Travis, go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering, for people who made it through COVID with that were asymptomatic, would you recommend that they get vaccinated if their body was already able to fight off the virus without any issue?
Simple answer is yes. Again, it's, I can't stress enough that I really think that it's important that everybody get vaccinated, because again, the people, so somebody who fought it off, and then they usually, the studies show that those antibodies, those individuals developed, usually wane very quickly. So that person then is another susceptible person who can pick it up again and spread it to somebody else who may not be able to fight it off. So this isn't about the person, this is about everybody. So this isn't about you who didn't have a bad situation. This is about somebody else you could give it to. So get vaccinated.
Travis, thank you. Jennifer in Eau Claire is with us and wanting to know about the vaccine and for children. Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm just wondering if you have any idea of when children are going to be eligible for vaccination in Wisconsin, particularly children that are in a higher risk category.
I don't know exactly when. I know that the trials are ongoing now with children age 6 months, I believe, and up. Moderna is approved. One of them, and I'm probably going to get this backwards. I think Moderna is 16 years old and Pfizer's 18, or it may be the opposite way around for young adults and teenagers. But for children, I do know that the trials are ongoing, and my understanding is the hope that there will be vaccine available for children later on in the summer so that they could get it before school.
Get it ahead of school starting. Jennifer, thank you. Annie, along those lines in Milwaukee, called and couldn't stay with us. And Annie would like to know, Dr. Graham, what do you think about large schools, large high schools returning to in-person classes?
I mean, as teachers are getting vaccinated, there are a number of different school systems that have already shown that they can do this safely and that mitigation things that they have taken up can be done safely. And it's always what you would look at for a risk and a benefit ratio with regards to the risk of the kids or the risk of teachers. Again, our teachers are being vaccinated. Young people, again, are hopefully that we're going to have the availability of the vaccine. But even without that, this past year, a number of school systems were able to keep kids in in-person learning. I feel very blessed that my kids are older. My youngest is a junior in college, and I don't have to deal with what my colleagues who have younger children are dealing with, because many are referring to this past year as a lost year of education. And we can't do that to our kids. We really can't. We need to get them back into in-person learning.
What
in the safest way that we can, and I think a lot of places have done that.
College campuses, though, are really struggling to try to keep COVID in check. What recommendations would you give to at the college level?
So most of the college students essentially are at that age where they can get the vaccine, and as soon as they are eligible for the vaccine, I don't think that schools will mandate vaccination for college students, again, especially when the vaccines are under what's referred to as an emergency use authorization. But I think that there can be a strong encouragement for kids to get vaccinated. I know at UW-Madison, where my son is at, it is what they have him doing right now. He can't wait to get the vaccine because he hates drooling in a cup every 3 days. Hmm. Because what he has to do, or else get put on academic probation, is drool in a cup and get tested for COVID every few days. He's locked out of any buildings on campus unless he gets tested on a routine basis. I think it's great that they're testing the kids that frequently. And he's like, Mom, as soon as I can get in my arm, I want it. And I said, great. And hopefully that will be the attitude of other college students.
We're talking with Dr. Mary Beth Graham, who is an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Graham, going back to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, some religious organizations have urged individuals to not receive the J&J vaccine. Can you tell us about this piece of the hesitancy?
So I think the Pope gave a dispensation, but the issue is the cell line in which the adenovirus vector was propagated is a cell line that has been used in research labs since the 1970s or 80s. I mean, it has been around for a long time. And it came from, my understanding is that the cell line came from aborted fetuses. So the issue is that these are cell lines that different labs use because they have characteristics where they can be carried, they're consistent, and then they're a very good tool in which to use them as a tool in order to grow viruses or to grow other things in a very consistent manner. So rather than getting different cells each time, if you have a stable cell line, then you know what you're seeing is related to what you're doing your experiment on. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that stance has been taken. It is, again, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, J&J vaccine is very effective in preventing moderate to severe disease, very incredibly effective in preventing severe disease. So I would say, please, again, don't have a hesitancy to get that one. And the good thing about that one's one and done. I really applaud Mayor Barrett and what they did in the city of Milwaukee to consider using this for some populations where they would have difficulty getting patients to come back in for a second shot. So I'm very excited that they thought about, where best to use the vaccine too for people. If you get your first shot, the immunity isn't full. You need that second shot. So are there situations where that one shot would be the best option?
Dr. Graham, in our few seconds left, have we turned a corner here? Have we turned a corner to end this pandemic?
So I think that there's a lot that's been done just in the last, there's been a lot done throughout this pandemic to get to this place, to this point. I mean, the work that was done to even get the vaccines to the point where they could be used for emergency use authorization, some of the therapeutics that we have. I mean, it's been an amazing year for scientific discovery and what has happened to get here. But it's not a time for complacency. It's not a time to say, oh, we're done with this. We still need to be on our guard. We still need to think about others. We still need to take those, take those precautions.
Dr. Graham, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Mary Beth Graham, internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. For Disclosure, Frederick Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin are WPR business sponsors. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.